I'm a walking, yes indeed, and I'm a talking about you and me. Yeah, I'm a hoping
you'll drop
little sway.
Oh yeah.
Now I'm forming words with my tongue. Now I'm
stumbling,
but I'm okay now. Yup. Now I'm walking
down the steps,
cause it's easier than walking up the steps.
Hey!
Did slide. Oh, that's a tough break for me.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are, this is Eric.
And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is true.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen. And not a one of you is prepared for it.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road. And, you know, anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Now I'm having a small heart attack, but I'm recovering.
Hey, yeah.
Now I'm seeing two coked out hotheads coming at me. Could be trouble. Oh, granny.
Hey, off the
Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 1987 movie Roxanne, directed by Fred Schapiezi. Brother Jay?
Yeah.
Tell me about Roxanne.
I saw this in the movie theaters.
I'm sure I saw it in the theater too. We must have all seen it in the theater. 1987, so it was my year of high school graduation.
Yeah, this would have been pre-theater day, so we would have had to pay for this. I have a vague rec. I mean, I know I saw it in the movie theater. I just don't remember anything about it. So I actually haven't seen it since the movie theater. So
really?
Yeah.
Wow. So, can you give your initial thought?
Well, it's really dated, and it's really kind of date rapey.
It's got elements of that, but I don't think in a Trump way.
No. Well, except that, you know, there is some fraud to get sex.
Yeah, there's that.
Then there's some sexism, and it's clearly dated. It's clearly from a different time.
Yeah.
Some of it holds up, some of it does not. So, and of course, this is already a remake anyway, technically. So,
well, a remake of a classic story.
Yes, which hopefully people may know, people may not.
Well, I'm going to argue that you pretty much, you know the story.
Well, I would hope so, especially because his initials were the same.
Well, and you've seen it in everything.
Yes. I had some difficulty because I couldn't turn the subtitles off, and I was playing it on my computer. So I've had some computer foibles.
Ah.
So when we were watching this on VLC player, for the first like 5 or 6 minutes, boyfriend Jesse and I was talking to him, and I said, I think something is wrong with this. I can't quite put my finger on it, but something's not right. And after about 5 minutes, I figured out it was like playing at like 1.5 speed.
Oh, that's hysterical.
And I thought the voices were just really strange. It sounded like Steve Martin, but not quite.
Like, who watches a movie at 1.5 speed?
I don't know. I guess if you're really in a hurry. Well,
that seems like too tempting for a boring movie. But it also seems that you'd be robbing yourself of the full movie experience.
Yeah, why watch it? If you were on a podcast, maybe, although you should savor every moment of podcasts, perhaps an audiobook you want to get done for a school project, maybe a movie you're watching for a class you want to get over class. I don't know. But it took me a while to figure it out. Then I had to try and figure out how to fix it. And so it was a thing. At any rate, having not watched this movie since the movie theater, which was a long time ago, it was interesting. It was interesting to see some very, very young characters and some very, very poor fashion choices and some odd syntax.
Well, had boyfriend Jesse seen this before?
No.
Okay, what did he think?
I think he thought it was cute, but a little strange.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, to me, this is just comfort food. This is,
you know, turn your brain off and just enjoy the magic, because it's not super serious. It's very, very silly.
It's not that good.
You don't think so?
So here's my thing.
Okay.
I think the first two-thirds of the movie was really good, and then when they got to the last third of the movie, they just crapped it.
Because do you think it's because they followed the Cyrano script too much? I mean,
I don't know. But there was a lot of story development and a lot of meat to the story in the first two-thirds of the movie. And then as they got to the end, it was almost as if they decided we got to finish. And they just threw all this crap together, and suddenly it was just over, you know? Because they go from all this story development to, I mean, spoilers, he's suddenly running off with a cocktail waitress.
Yeah, well, there's that.
So it was that kind of odd choice in the story. I understand they only had, had so much movie.
But they had to follow along with the story at a certain point.
Yeah, no, I understand, but I think it could have been a little more deliberate, a little better paced, at least towards the end. Because there were some slow parts in the beginning that didn't need to be if you were going to elongate the back end of the movie. So they, you know, they drew it out in the front end at the expense of the back end, at least how I feel.
Yeah, well, let me introduce it this way. The director, Fred Schapisi, he directed Iceman, 6 Degrees of Separation, Fierce Creatures,
Iceman, is that the Kuklinski story?
No, sorry. Iceman was, I think, the thawing the caveman story. It's very big at the time.
Oh, was that another Daryl Hannah movie?
I don't think, no, you're thinking of Clan of the Cave Bear.
I can't keep track of it.
Then there's 6 Degrees of Separation with, of course, Will Smith and the cast of thousands we talked about earlier. Then Fierce Creatures, which was the sequel to A Fish Called Wanda. And then he directed Mr. Baseball with Tom Selleck and also The Russia House, which I think we had talked about before.
Oh, Michelle Pfeiffer and Sean Connery?
Yes.
That played at the movie theater when I worked there. It was terrible. So, this is a Jean-Luc Carré novel.
Yeah.
It's terrible. Terrible. I've seen parts of it 1,000 times.
That's funny. Well, okay, so let me introduce you also to Steve Martin at the time, because I think this is going to explain a little bit. Again, I don't want to defend this movie super hard, except that, like I said, this is very comforting to me. This is a movie where it's, you know, it's just fun. But considering this is 87, let's go back in time from the Steve Martin time. You know, Steve Martin was a stand-up comedian that was very absurd. I mean, we knew him from the arrow through his head and the cat juggling and just the wackiness. So we saw him in The Jerk. We saw him, Pennies from Heaven, Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid, The Man with Two Brains, All of Me, The Lonely Guy, Little Shop of Horrors. And then we get to Three Amigos, 86, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, 87, and Roxanne, 87. And Roxanne was the first time he considers himself taken seriously as an actor. Because he's developing, you know, he wrote the script, and so he adapted this classic story, and so he was more in control of this, and he didn't, I mean, it was very goofy in the beginning. Like, I actually wrote in my notes, you know, who walks funnier than Steve Martin? No one.
John Cleese.
Maybe. But, you know, it's just the opening scene. Like, okay, so here's a couple of notes in the beginning. I put worst opening theme ever. Also, most 80s font ever.
I wrote sax opening. Ouch.
Oh, yeah.
And then I wrote rare action sequence opening.
Well, I love the action sequence opening, and it is signature goofy Steve Martin. It is, he's singing a silly song, and that's the opening I'm going to put in the podcast.
And then Kevin Nealon.
Yes, Kevin Nealon and Rich Scheidner, both comedians.
That's so hilarious.
As coked up hopheads, which I put as about right.
And it's that whole tennis thing, which, by the way, is a common comedic gimmick, because they use that in Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead to tick off jokes.
No, it's a trope.
No, the opening was hilarious. It made me laugh out loud. I quite literally laughed out loud.
Yeah, I love the little song. I love the nod to his you know, sword play that they have in the play Cyrano.
Yeah. He's very jaunty jolly.
Yeah, it's fun. And at first I had to rewind. I'm like, is this like day for night shooting? Does he leave the house like at the crack of dawn and then he has his fight in the daytime, the morning, and then he suddenly is at the diner at night? But I think he's working the night shift.
It was an odd back and forth.
Yeah, I think it was just, it was weird. It took me out of it for just a second. Yeah, so that, you know, then we meet, I'm not going to be super ticking off the plot points, but basically.
Well, again, it's a comedy, so it's hard to.
Yeah.
It's hard to transcend the comedy.
Well, so we have the typical Cyrano love story where we have C.D. Bales, who is Steve Martin. He's the chief of a volunteer fire department, and they live in this small town in the Pacific Northwest someplace.
I think they're in the city of Nelson, aren't they?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And they shot it all in B.C., so that makes sense, or most of it in B.C. So we've got the mayor, Fred Willard, who was always great. We've got Chuck, the owner of All Things Dead, played by John Capellos, who was Carl the Jenner in The Breakfast Club, and he was in 16 Candles, Weird Science, Forever Night, and Justified. We've got Michael Pollard, who's Andy, and he's from Scrooged, and Bonnie and Clyde, and Tango and Cash. And then we have Jerry, played by Damon Wayans.
Which, again, all these people really young.
Yeah, yeah. And they're just all goofballs. And, you know, it's just sort of fun. And they are a lot of the background. What I enjoyed about this movie was that while the main plot is pretty straightforward and predictable because, of course, you know, it's on a classic, there's a lot of just funny shtick going on in the background, which I like. So any scene with the fireman in is just full of things if you want to. You just kind of drift away from the main story arc and kind of watch the goofy things they're doing.
Yeah, it was like a three-ring circus in the background.
Yeah. And there's lots of physical comedy in this. There's all that whole acrobat thing because, of course, C.D. is Cyrano, so he has this gigantic nose and he's very touchy about it. But he's also very skilled and athletic in other ways. You know, he's very smart, very clever, and witty. And he is very athletic, and he's a good fighter, and he does that sword play thing with the tennis racket. And he is beloved by the town, but not loved by a woman. And he thinks himself unworthy of love.
Well, he's kind of everybody's pal.
Exactly.
He's kind of the bridesmaid, if you will.
He's been friend-zoned by the entire town.
Yeah. Also, I made me wonder, I was looking very intently to try and figure out if he was using a stunt double or if he was actually doing some of the acrobatics himself. Pretty sure it was a double.
Oh, yeah. No, he had to have been doing it. Because, yeah, there's no way. He's, you know, Steve Martin is a juggler and he can do some, like, the rope tricks I think he does in Three Amigos. I think that's him because that's kind of a juggler thing to do. But I'm pretty sure, yeah, it was an actual like acrobat gymnast who did all those climbing up into the house and whatnot. So, you know, so his character is he's very compelling because, you know, he's not bitter, except that he definitely sees himself as not worthy of the love of a woman.
Well, I think he feels himself inferior because of the nose, and he knows, yeah, no pun intended, he knows his nose is an impediment, or I shouldn't say he knows. He makes it an impediment where it really shouldn't be.
Yeah, well, and
it's a typical woe is me.
Yeah, well, and it's, you know, because I think it's such a beloved story is because everybody can see that part of themselves and others, I think. I mean, unless you're Donald Trump or otherwise a monster, everybody thinks they have, you know, something wrong with them that would probably hold them back.
Pussy grabber.
but anyway, but maybe I'm projecting. So
there's a Fitz in the Tantrum song that's Money Grabber in it. Now I just have totally transmorphed it into Pussy Grabber. See, it's just waiting to be written.
It is. So, and for next time, you can sing it next week.
Yeah, that's
because Drew would like nothing better for than you to break into song.
I don't think I could actually listen to the podcast with me singing.
Okay.
Well. I can listen to myself talking, but if I started singing, it's all over.
Challenge!
I'm sorry?
Challenge!
Okay.
I've thrown down the challenge gauntlet.
I see.
Challenge! Challenge!
So he loves Roxanne, or he meets Roxanne, who's Daryl Hannah, who's lovely as ever. And by the way, I don't know about you, but did you notice the amount of big noses naturally in this movie?
Did you also notice the amount of big old lady glasses?
Yes. Well, it was 87. A lot of the fashion choices and a lot
of...
Wow. That's going to be a lot of 1987. Lots of pastels. Did you notice the plastic surgeon's shirt?
Yes.
Which I think if I remember correctly, let's see, I wrote down blue silk open neck shirt with chains, and yeah. He had a big nose. When the plastic surgeon has a big old nose,
I believe we had a neighbor named Larry who dressed very much like that.
Larry was the skinnier version of that. Yes.
Yes.
Yes, but he was he was a fashion victim as well.
I mean, the only thing I have to say, I think I texted you this movie because the women of this movie had the line, like, he's got a great ass.
Oh, yeah. It's a very Al Pacino movie.
And, there was a lot of talk of mulled wine and hot tubbing.
Well, but that was, again, that was 80s. By the way, remember, this is 1987.
So dated.
There is a lot of cocaine going around.
Yes.
And there is, these are people like in a ski community. Not a very Aspen. Successful ski community, really. They're trying to compete with Aspen. Yeah. In fact, they're having Oktoberfest in July, which is pretty hilarious.
I have an honest question, because I had a hard time with parts of this movie. Shelley Duvall.
Yeah. His god sister.
I don't think she's a good actress. I think she's terrible in this movie, and I can't tell if she was trying to play a bimbo or if she was being herself, but her acting was really kind of staunch and stilted, and she didn't enunciate, and I don't know. I just found her performance annoying.
Okay, I'm going to defend Shelley Duvall for two reasons.
The Shining?
Well, The Shining, most definitely.
I knew that was coming.
Your buddy Stan was a bastard to her on The Shining. He was...
I understand. Yes, I know.
Stanley Cubes...
He honestly told everybody to alienate her.
Oh, he was a monster to her.
If it hadn't been for that, volley of ideas and sometimes butting of heads together, it wouldn't have come out as good as it did. And it also helps get the emotion up and the concentration up, because it builds up anger, actually, and you get more out of yourself. And he knew that, and he knew he was getting more out of me by doing that. So it was sort of like a game. You appreciate all the pain. I mean, you always dislike whatever the cause is of pain. You always resent it. So I resented Stanley at times because he pushed me, and it hurt. And I resented him for it. I thought, why do you want to do this to me? How can you do this to me? You agonize over it, and it's just a necessary turmoil to get out of it what you want out of it. I mean, we had the same end in mind. It was just that sometimes we differed in our means. And by the end, the means met. And I find I really respect him and really like him, both as a person and as a director. I mean, I'm amazed. He's taught me more than I've learned on all the other pictures I've done within 1 year's time on one picture.
Secondly, she was playing the buddy. She was that butch girl in a Roadhouse. The friend from the bar?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was her role. So I thought she was fine. I didn't.
But she was like a horse face.
Yeah, but again, she's an ugly duckling herself.
Hoy.
Yeah, well,
She could bite an apple through a picket fence.
Jeez. Well, next to Daryl Hannah, everybody looks like that. Except, let me tell you, their friend, their other girlfriend, is the sassy
Sandy the waitress.
Sandy, yeah. Who I thought, for probably half of the movie, I thought it was Dinah Manhoff, who played Marty Maraschino from Grease.
I thought for a moment she was, is it Allison Eastwood that's in Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil?
Yeah, it might be. Yes.
She looks like Allison Eastwood.
I think Allison Eastwood
there was no way the timing would have worked. She would have been way too young when this movie came out, but she looked the same. She had the same kind of look. But I liked her. Her character was fun.
She was awesome. And she was also, it's funny because she had that the sassy bartender kind of vibe going on. Her name, by the way, the actress is Chandra Berry, who is actually best known for costumery. She did costumes for Good Night and Good Luck, The Prestige, Ocean's 13, and The Good German.
Good Night and Good Luck. Did we ever release that?
Not yet. We will soon.
All right.
Any day now.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so we have Roxanne, played by Daryl Hannah, who is an astronomer. So we have this meet-cute thing where she gets locked out of her house naked, and Steve Martin is the good guy who... Well, he's sort of a good guy.
Not really.
He's pretty much a good guy.
He insinuates himself in her home.
Oh, he does, yes.
He helps himself to her food and drink.
Yes.
That's a dick move.
Yeah. Oh, no, he's trying to be smooth. And he's
presumptuous.
Creepy. Oh yeah, very presumptuous. No, this is I'm so glad to be married. I don't ever want to be single again. But yeah, I feel for you.
Yeah, no. I am lucky somebody will still have me at this point, so.
Oh no, you're a catch. and not just cuz your mom thinks so. So who comes into town? Professional firefighter Chris, played by Rick Rossovich, who, by the way, was, among other things, Slider from Top Gun. He played in the TV series Pacific Blue, and he has been in 6 Bill Paxton movies. Terminator, Streets of Fire, Navy SEALs, Lords of Discipline, Future Shock, and Deadly Lessons.
He has a reputation, by the way, of being the nicest guy you could work with.
Oh, that's awesome.
But I realize he was supposed to play an idiot. But
you think
wow.
He was too idiot? He was too idiotic?
I think it was too over the top.
Yeah, I think so. Being super shy is one thing, but did he need to be an idiot as well as being super shy?
Well, and I think that he was perhaps playing it, and I don't know if he was playing it up for Steve Martin, because Steve Martin was trying to be funny too, but I think he was trying too hard to be funny.
Maybe.
So, and it may have been the time.
You could see him acting, is what you're saying?
Yes. Yeah. You could see the moving parts.
Ah, okay.
And it wasn't a terrible performance. He did a fine job. And I've seen him in a ton of things.
Oh, yeah. Basically, and again, this is just the typical Cyrano story without the tragic Cyrano ending. But we have a whole bunch of stuff, including there's the very funny scene in the bar where CD has to have like an insult fight. It's very contrived, but I think it's also right from the play, where he gives his one-liners. He says 20, but I think he said like 24, 25.
It seemed, yeah, I didn't count him, but it seemed like more than 20.
So, of course, you know, he's very, very fond of Roxanne because she's very pretty and also very smart. And she has a good time talking to him, but she is attracted to Chris, who, even though the guy from All Things Dead, who welcomed him to town, somehow pumped him up as a ladies' man, maybe, I don't know, wishful thinking, or maybe he's the Billy Bush.
Calling him the maestro.
Yeah. Is he Billy Bush? Is that who that the All Things Dead guy is?
Kind.
Like locker kind room of. Talk from the beginning?
You know, the funny thing about that comment, I wrote a line here on this piece of paper. This movie is all about masking sexual harassment.
it's a theme. I think it's a theme in society right now. So, I mean, in these
can
days...
Can I fluff your pillows?
Like, well, I can't imagine a scenario where it's like, hey, hey, meet our new workmate. Of course, I work with mostly women, but I can't see the situation. It's like, yay, welcome, Johnny. He really crushes the puss. I'm just gonna move on from that. So,
you know, I'm a big Fajoti, but I wish to take this moment to apologize to all of the women in the world. So I'm just ready for it to be over.
Yeah. Okay. So back to the movie just a little bit. So it's again, from this point on, it's very, very predictable, except that in the end, spoiler, of course, Chris runs off with Sandy and is going to be a blackjack dealer in Tahoe or something. And Roxanne finds out that CD has been writing all the love letters that are supposed to have come from Chris. And then he confesses their love for Roxanne, and it's all very exciting. What was the quote?
10 more seconds and I'm leaving.
What did you say?
I said 10 more seconds and I'm leaving. Wait a minute, what'd you think I said?
I thought you said earn more sessions by sleeving.
Well, what the hell does that mean?
I don't know, that's why I came out.
Like, I think that's a beautiful piece of work right there. I love that.
It is a brilliant craft.
Yeah, it's a nice joke.
By the way, did you think his nose changed sizes throughout the movie?
I noticed he was looking straight at the camera an awful lot. So it didn't seem like such an impediment.
I think that his nose had different sizes at different points.
Well, maybe. I know that the makeup guy was like, "Oh, this is the hardest job I've ever had," because he had to blend this nose into a face and didn't have a lot of room to work with, so it would look really bad if he got it wrong. Anyway, and I, like I said, this movie to me was all fun, all comforting. This isn't a movie that you stress out with. This is the movie, I think, that you just chill out. If it's on TV and I'm flipping through the channels, I very well may stop and watch it, the whole thing.
Yeah, I was more meh about it.
Okay, so your verdict is meh?
Yeah, I think I remember it being funnier than it was. I think, or maybe it was funny at the time for the era, but I think now it doesn't quite hold up in the humor side of it. It does tell the story really well, but like I said, it fell really flat at the end. And there's some weird side stories that were just sometimes head scratching with the old ladies. We're talking about the old ladies and the aliens, and you know, there's aliens that want to have sex with old women.
It's not even the story that's funny in that. It's him walking around, which is really, really funny to me.
Yeah.
It's like, again, who walks better, the funnier than Steve Martin? With a goofy walk.
John Cleese.
Okay. All right. Okay. So I will
defend John Cleese.
No, that's in the fine. Silly Walk. He was part of the Ministry of Silly Walks, right?
Yes. Yes.
So, okay. So I did a little poking around and.
No pun intended. No. With your nose?
Yes. Yeah.
Nose to the grindstone.
Nose to the grindstone. And okay, so here's a list, an abbreviated list, not a full list, of course, of Cyrano in the movies, adaptations of Cyrano, except for like, I don't mean like the Gerard Depardieu actual Cyrano movie, but I mean like.
Have you seen the Gerard Depardieu movie, by the way?
Well, I am in the camp of Depardon't. I'm not a big fan of the Depardieu, although he was okay in that Three Musketeers movie.
He's not a terrible actor, although he's kind of a terrible person sometimes. But it's not a great movie. Don't save yourself.
Instead, think of all these other Cyrano movies. Blades of Glory has two Cyrano versions. The Truth About Cats and Dogs is pretty much a Cyrano movie. Back to the Future, Marty McFly is Cyrano for his teenage father George. Let's see, Short Circuit 2. The Ugly Truth, which is the horrible Gerard Butler
Short Circuit 2
Katherine Heigl movie.
Are you kidding?
What's New Pussycat? Peter Sellers and Peter O'Toole. We've got Disney's Three Musketeers. And then, of course, on the television, Instantly, I thought of Three's Company, but on the list I found on TVTropes.com or TVTropes.org, which is a good place to, if you think you're writing a hacky script, go to TV Tropes and flip through the normal, well-worn tropes that are used in TV and movies. It's pretty interesting, but I'll put a link in the notes. But okay, so we have, of course, Seinfeld and Bones and Picket Fences. We've got the Brady Bunch. We've got Deep Space Nine. In Deep Space Nine, Worf trains Quark in how to woo Klingon matriarch Grilka. We've got My So-Called Life. We've got, of course, a lot of English movie or TV shows I don't know about, like Blackadder. We have Lizzie McGuire. We got Will and Grace, probably more than once. We have Friends. We've got Charmed. We have Family Ties, where it happened twice, actually. We have, let's see, 30 Rock. We've got Heroes. We've got Smallville, Boy Meets World, Home and Away, Flight of the Conchords, Roseanne, Glee, Stargate Atlantis, How I Met Your Mother, two separate episodes, White Collar, Hannah Montana, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, let's see, Degrassi, The Muppets Tonight, Parks and Rec, Mad Men, let's see, Roseanne, I think I already said, Person of Interest, and then in Three's Company, this is what I thought of, there's actually two, one is actually an episode called Cyrano de Tripper, where Chrissy tries to impress her new boyfriend by having Jack secretly prepare a dinner for her date that he will think that she prepared. And then, of course, Strangers in the Night, which is the one I remembered, where Jack is trying to impress his Southern Belle girlfriend, Arabella, and he's trying to serenade her. So he doesn't sing, so he lip syncs while Larry does the singing from the bushes. And it turns out he throws a rock at the wrong girl's apartment window. So Bernice shows up and she's heavy set and not as pretty as Arabella. And so Jack is shocked, but of course it's Three's Company. So he can't find a way out of it. And it ends up looking very sad. But of course, turns out Arabella has a heart of gold. I'm sorry, Arabella doesn't. Bernice has a heart of gold. Arabella is a pretty but mean. And so Jack gives Bernice has the night of her life. In a non-sexual way, because, you know, it's Three's Company.
Not in a creepy way.
Yeah, they don't, it's not, it's a different time.
Yeah, I was going to say that was the era.
Yeah. But, yeah, so TVTropes.org.
So I just, to tie into Three's Company, I just finished the biography of Johnny Carson.
Oh, your review, sir?
It's pretty fascinating. It talks a lot about Carson's...
No, you're supposed to say it's weird, wild stuff.
I don't imitate Johnny because I just respect them too much.
Neither do I. I just say weird, wild stuff. It's not a very good impression.
But listening to the audiobook, which was written by his best friend / attorney... It really paints a picture of Carson's life, which was pretty interesting. But the reason it's a good listen. It's a good book. If you're a big Carson fan, although I will warn you, we'll disillusion you about some of Carson's because he was kind of a bastard. So
what's the name of this book?
Well, that's a good question.
That was your impression of Reagan. Well.
Johnny Carson by Henry Bushkin.
Okay. not a great title thinker-upper, are you, counselor?
Bushkin was dating Joyce DeWitt.
Oh, get out of town.
Yeah.
She must have been a hot number back then.
Yeah. So it was funny. After Bushkin got divorced, he was dating Joyce DeWitt. So it was one of those. It was clearly the era.
Yeah, why not?
And Johnny had the hots for Joyce DeWitt, and she had to pretend not to get phone calls because she was pretty loyal to Henry, and it was just kind of fascinating.
That's kind sweet.
It's interesting to, because she didn't want to turn, well, you didn't turn Johnny Carson down because you didn't want to get blacklisted from the show.
So you think he would use that against, in a way to promote sexual behavior?
Maybe.
That's a rather villainous thing, although maybe only in today's standards.
I was going to say it's nearly presidential.
Yeah, these days, yeah. A question for you. Speaking of books,
yes.
Have you are you familiar with Dave Holmes?
No.
Okay, Dave Holmes. He's a comedian, and he's the host of a podcast called International Waters. But he is most known for losing the very first audience picked MTV VJ contest. He lost it to Jesse Camp, who was something of a train wreck. But because Jesse was a train wreck, Dave Holmes got lots of work from it.
He's not related to Pete Holmes, is he?
No, he's not. It's awesome. He's very funny. He's very articulate. He's gay as Christmas. And I think the book is like called My Life in 20 Songs. And every chapter is the name of a song.
No, and nice.
But I haven't read the book yet, but I think I'm going to pull the trigger on it. Because like I said, I can listen to him talk because he's very, very funny. And he has a very way with words.
Yeah. Ah, excellent. I just downloaded my pre-order today of The Secret History of Twin Peaks.
Ah. Oh, so remember we talked about the Young Frankenstein book and how it was a sort of short and whatever? Well, I looked it up online and it's the whole thing is actually photo driven. here's these big bunch of photos from the production. And here's some stories behind them. So it probably is not in your interest to get the audiobook.
Well, that makes me feel better.
Like, for instance, there was a book, Audible. I don't know about you, but do you ever look for the new releases on Audible? Just sort of browsing?
I don't usually. Every now and then something will catch my eye, but I avoid going to Audible because invariably if I do, I buy something.
Well, there's that.
And but I just don't need to buy more stuff. So it's bad enough I get the daily emails with the daily deals and then I get hooked with the, hey, it's the science fiction complete your series sale.
Exactly. Yeah.
Which killed me because they just had two different authors on sale. One of which I needed 5 books to complete, and the other one I haven't even started the series yet. So I was just looking like, I can't spend this much.
Oh yeah, I will never have time to listen to all the books I have purchased. And yet, I will continue to purchase.
I'm pretty good. I've only got probably about a dozen in my library I haven't listened to. And now that I'm riding the train, 35, 40 minutes a day, twice a day, I've got plenty of time to listen, so...
Yeah, good. Excellent.
Although the 538 podcast has been taking up lots of my time.
So. Oh, no, I like, it's funny. I have run out of podcast episodes lately, even with all the election episodes. I still have run out. And the nice thing is, though, if I, for whatever reason, miss a day, any of those political episodes, you can just erase because things are changing so quickly. It's like the latest scandal is crazy.
West Wing Weekly.
West Wing. Oh, yeah. I haven't listened to that at all. I'm listening to some CBC, Canadian news comedy podcasts.
News comedy? How does that work?
Well, it's kind of a little bit like The Daily Show. Not quite as serious as The Daily Show or The Colbert Report, but more just kind of goofy take or flat-out made-up stories. I think there's a podcast called This Is That, which is pretty great. And they're doing the This Is That Guide to Canada, where Dave Shumka of Stop Podcasting Yourself is a co-author on that book. But it's just kind of fun. Where was I going? Oh, with the Audible thing. So there is... I'm constantly amazed at the quality of the audiobooks on Audible. The means of production are available to everybody. The fact that we are making what basically is an internet radio show from our homes separated by thousands of miles and the audio comes out sounding pretty good, it means that pretty much anybody can do this. It just takes some practice and a little bit of time.
Some of my problems with some of the voice talent for Audible is either their sound booth that they use, and I assume that people do this largely from home or some kind of voice studio. There's one where his lips, when he licks them, you can hear it and it reverberates in the walls of his sound chamber.
Yeah, that's a problem.
And once you hear it, you can't unhear it. And I've got like 15 books read by this author. So I can't listen to them in the car anymore because the sound system in my car is so crystal clear that I can hear it. And it drives me crazy.
Yeah. And that's the I think I told you, I was editing the podcast for 2010, where we had made a little bit of fun of the misophonia again. And then all I did with the rest of the editing was hear me breathe in between sentences because I didn't back up from the mic because, you know, I tried if I'm going to take a deep breath, I kind of move off the mic a little bit. The problem with that is, you know, if I don't
go right
back
changes.
To it, the level changes. Yeah, so it's a fiddling process.
Do you not have a screen that kind of helps that?
I've got an internal pop filter. I have an external pop filter. I've got all sorts of things. I just don't have good mic discipline probably. Also, with the breathing thing, I find that if I completely mute it, because I can create silence and just take away all of the thing, all the breathing, that kind of sounds clipped. So what I often do, if I'm being a perfectionist about it, is lower the volume so that you can hear it just a little bit.
It's imperceptible.
So that it doesn't have just an empty space. It's like you have a natural break. Plus, if I can erase it, like just delete it, and that makes it so that we have a lot of sentences with no spaces between sentences, and then it's hard to listen to, and it's kind of weird.
It's not like listening to Muse where he goes to sing, and you can hear that.
Yeah, I don't want to do that. It's not great.
Hate that.
Well,
hate it. But the other thing I think I mentioned to you is, as an Audible subscriber, I get that was the New York Times Daily Digest.
Yes.
And it's clear the guy does it like in his home office, and I can hear his chair when he shifts.
Oh, there is, you know, if you listen, like when audiobooks were a relatively new thing, you could hear all sorts of like what are considered, I mean, there are mistakes, but I'll get to my point here in a second, but where you hear pages turn or you hear like the worst thing, the first time I heard
pages turning would be a comfort to me though. That would be cool. I would have no problem hearing pages turn.
Well, that's the thing is that at what point, so you're listening to someone talk to you and they're, you know, it's theater of the mind. And it's a very, like with all radio, like when I think about, you know, my growing up with Herb Shainlin and all those important radio shows, it's like the person's talking directly to you. So he's telling you a story. It's getting in your head. So when he changes the pages, when he flips, it's like an ASMR thing. It doesn't give me the tingles, but it takes me to a place. It's like the background. It's like the coconut shells that they can use for the horse hooves, you know, where it's creating an effect. So I totally see that part of it. What I don't like is when the voice talent pronounces the knife brand Jinsu. Because that should have been caught by somebody who's listening.
Well, I have there's pronunciation issues all abound, though.
Oh, I mispronounce plenty of stuff, but I'm not getting paid for this.
One of the audiobooks I'm currently listening to, because I'm listening to three right now because I'm insane. It's either the chapters change, but the story is it's a science fiction story. The story is written in two parts. And they alternate back and forth between the humans and this other race, this alien race. But the reader doesn't pause when he switches from one to the other. So one paragraph will end and he'll start a new paragraph. And this next paragraph is a completely different part of the story. But it takes me probably 5 minutes to realize he's changed.
Well, and that's the thing.
There's no transition.
Like now, you know, now that I've edited podcasts for a while, now I understand the value of removing all dead air. Like, you don't want to have a bunch of dead air. But I also appreciate a nice little pause. Like if you're reading a book between chapters, there should be a hard pause. It should be a nice like 1.5 second or 2 second pause. Even if you can't do that, for some reason you're ethically unable to have dead air, at least between chapters say, so chapter 4, and then go on to it. Because there's nothing more irritating than not having any pauses between paragraphs or chapters. Paragraphs are killing me. It's kind of like the book Cujo. The Stephen King book Cujo has no chapters and no paragraphs, I don't think. I'd have to revisit the book itself. But I'm pretty sure it has no chapters. It just goes. Which is because Stephen King, like, I can understand how people would be irritated by it, but I find it charming. If you look through Stephen King's catalog, Stephen King has written in every style. He has written romance stories. He has written H.P. Lovecraft stories. He has written Mark Twain stories.
Do you think he's doing it just to tick off a list?
I think he likes the, you know, he's an English professor, pretty much. He's a literature person. So I think he's like doing a challenge. He's like, could I write a fantasy book? Can I write can I write a love story? Can I do this? You know, he did all these like stunts. Like, he put out The Green Mile as a serialized book, where I remember I bought it in serialized audio chapters that would be released like every couple months. And the book has, you know, that's basically stunt publishing, and yet it's a fantastic story and was a great movie. So, you know, it's, but yeah, Stephen King has done everything like that. So, you know, there's trickery involved in these things. But what I was going to suggest is, here, do you have the internets in front of you?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Let's see if this will work out as I intend. Go to audible.com.
Okay.
Okay. And just type Chuck Tingle, like Charles, Chuck Tingle. And then just read just the titles, not any of the descriptions, just the titles. It slays me. Now, I have never bought a Chuck Tingle book, although I'm not beyond it, I guess. It's just not my thing. But again, the barrier to entry is very, very small, I think. I'm sure Chuck Tingle puts out his books in an afternoon after drinking a whole lot or taking some mushrooms or something.
What is this?
Just read some titles.
No. What?
Trust me. You have to.
I don't. First of all, these are only like 20 minutes a piece.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And I bet you they're expensive too, aren't they? They're like $5 or something.
The state of California stalks my gay butthole. Really?
Yes, yes. There's lots of object things. Like, I think he literally has a thing called
Space Raptor Butt Invasion.
Yes, I think he has one where his butt does him in his butt. Done in the butt by my butt.
Pounded in the butt by my book, pounded in the butt by my own butt.
Yes, yes.
What?
Or my boss's cup of hot coffee pounds me in the butt.
Pounded by the gay unicorn football squad. Gay unicorn football squad.
Of course,
sorry.
Yes.
Why don't...
So we have this, which is a very specific thing. But then we also have audio...
I don't... Wait. No. Don't. Just... hang on just a second. You don't get to drop this grenade and just leave the room. So, first of all, how did you discover this?
By looking at new releases. It slays me to look at new releases and come across crazy erotic fiction. Because a lot of times they are selling these things as it's like, they'll be like, Daddy's Home, a stepfather, stepdaughter, role play, BDSM, ATM, FBI, and, you know, whatever.
Hey, But you gotta get one of them, because the pounded in the butt by my own butt is narrated by himself.
Of course.
But the rest of them are not. Sam Rand does the... So how awkward has it got to be that you have to narrate? I can't imagine what kind of strangeness that would be like.
But how about this? I think in the last day or two, part of the new releases.
Oh my god, there are tons of them.
I'm telling you, he has a genre.
You and I are in the wrong business.
Except neither you nor I could come up with this.
Oh, I bet we could. Not this, but I'm sure you and I could create the Brothers Anderson, the three of us could come up with something like this.
Oh, I'm not putting my name, my actual name. I'm sure Chuck Tingle's done.
You wouldn't have to. You can just do the content. I can be the front man.
Okay.
So, I can be a gay unicorn. I don't have any pride. I'm fine. If it makes money. I've got a Wolford the Dog Halloween costume. I got no pride.
Okay. All right. But anyway, what this is bringing me to was, so that is an example of the absurdity, but that is an absurd thing. That's just an absurd thing. That's just what it is.
But that's an understatement.
But how about this? How about an audiobook of sexual positions?
But how?
Under what circumstances are you buying an audiobook of sexual positions? It's incredible.
Yeah, because if you're blind,
you're thinking it as an act of altruism is to make an audiobook of sexual positions for the blind?
Maybe.
Okay, all right. You are a better person than me.
That's the only thing I can think of. Otherwise, it's just wankery.
Well, no, but this is a whole category of wankery, I'm sure. But it's like, I just can't imagine what that would be like. But I'm not willing to drop the $4 to buy a 30-minute book of sexual positions on audio.
Well, Christmas is coming.
Yeah, I've made a lot of rash purchases, but this is not going to be one of them.
No, you shouldn't use rash in sexual positions.
Yeah, there you go. Well, if you listen carefully, you can avoid that. So Audible, again, and there's lots of, like, I remember I bought, because I'm like, I really like horror short stories. Okay, and this is just like horror movies. I like horror movies a lot. But horror short stories and horror movies are, for the most part, bad.
Yeah.
They're not.
I get it.
And so you have to be.
Because there's enough people like you that buy them.
Yeah, that's the problem.
They don't have to be good.
Yeah. Well, but then, okay, so I have there's a couple of different genres of horror book that I don't like. Like, I don't like period pieces for the most part, or ghost stories, because they're mostly period pieces. You know, I basically, and I want a fairly short book, you know, like a novella or shorter. I don't really want like a 24-hour, unless it's a Stephen King story. And even then, sometimes, partly because if I get interrupted, you know, 10 hours in, I'll be irritated that, because, you know, I'll listen to 45 podcasts a day, and then, well, not quite a day, 45 a day, but close. and then, you know, so then it'll be 2 months and I'll just never finish the book because I've already, you know, I've invested enough, too much to restart, not enough to keep going. But I bought some little short stories at a very reasonable price, I thought, by a guy who went by the name of Drac Van Stoller. And the covers of these books were pretty well done for an obviously amateur. Well, first of all, they're well done because they're either stock photos or just stolen from online. I found that out pretty quick. Secondly, that's all self-published from home, which is, you know, whatever. Like I said, I'm not too picky if you're good. But because I listen to podcasts, I listen to a lot of different levels of production values. So if I pay for it, I'm going to be really pissed if it's bad. But these books, I think I did a review of one that, and this is before you could return books to Audible, where it was like, I don't know who this was written for. It's almost like it was written for people who are English as a second language, except there's not enough there for them to learn. It was like, it was, and I didn't put this in a review, but it was like listening to someone low on the spectrum of perhaps mental retardation. Like, that's the level of story. Yeah, like, it would be written, if an 8-year-old had written the story, the 8-year-old would not be in the head of his class as the 8-year-old. I'm just saying.
Oh, dear.
So
no gifted program.
No. And yet, they kept showing up in the horror section over and over and over. And there would always be another one. Or you'd get, like, you know, 30 short stories by Drac Van Stoller. And they were all horrible. And they're all based on, like, your typical horror trope premises. But it was like, you know, the man with the hook at Lover's Lane. That would be the name of the story. And it'd be like, there was a man on Lover's Lane and had a hook. And the people in Lover's Lane were very scared of the man with the hook who they heard about on their radio, which they were watching, listening to from their car in the Lover's Lane. And they heard no, it was just, that's exactly the level. It's like, oh, kill me now. So, anyway, so Audible. Maybe they won't do their sponsorship with this now, but I love it. I'm addicted to Audible.
I guess that check's going to get canceled.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let me tell you, our listeners are loyal. We love them, but they're not quite enough of them to inspire, say, Casper mattresses or
Me Undies.
Yes. or Blue Apron or extremerestraints.com. Don't look that one up, Mom.
Is that a thing?
Yes. For a while, they sponsored, I think, Jordan Jesse Go. It was hilarious. Good for them for pulling in sponsorships.
The 538 podcast gets advertised by MeUndies. It makes me uncomfortable to listen to on the train because I was like, who can hear my headphones? But luckily, they're embedded in my ear canal. So,
well, anybody who knows about podcasts has heard about MeUndies. So,
I just think pirates when I hear MeUndies.
Oh yeah,
yarg, MeUndies.
Avast MeUndies, prepare to be boarded. Yeah. Walk the antimicrobial plank. Yeah. Also, Casper mattresses. Have you heard about them? It's like a latex foam mattress that comes in the box the size of a refrigerator box. You can try it for 100 days, and if you don't like it, send it back. Two things about that. What does this mean, that if I order a Casper mattress, I could get somebody else's 99 days of butt sweat used mattress? And two, if when you open the box, it unfolds and like some sort of like expanding thing over the course of a little while till it's full size, how the hell do you get that back in the box to send it back to them?
I don't think you do. I think they just come and take it away for you.
Somebody takes a mattress size thing away from you? For you?
I think they have a service that does it.
I guess. I don't know.
And I'm pretty sure it just gets recycled.
Again, it goes to like Eric's house, and it's got pre-butt sweated on.
No, it probably goes to like a shelter or something. They probably just write it off.
Okay, you...
It's probably a pretty low percentage of people, but...
Well, that's the thing. Once you're stuck with a mattress, I don't know if you're going to give it back right away.
But that's how... I mean, I bought one of those... Fred Meyer had those mattresses.
Oh, I'm not saying they're bad
before
mattresses.
Before they were on the internet.
Yeah, I'm sure they're...
No, I'm just saying. But I bought it. It was amazing because it did come in this teeny, teeny, tiny, teeny, tiny little box. And okay, you open the box... I love Rachel Maddow.
Oh, me too.
You open the box and then it's in this sleeve and it warns you, do not open this until it's in the position you want it to be in.
Do not open it in the car.
the whole raft trope.
Yeah. So there is a raft trope.
I put it in my room and it warns you though, it takes a couple of days to come to full size, but, it was pretty amazing. I gotta say, it's also nice to have a mattress that I can very easily lift on my own.
Yeah.
So that's nice. But I've had it for a while, and it's starting to lose its punch. But it's 5 or 6 years old, so I figure the $300 I spent on it was totally worth it.
Well, you know what? I think if you go to CasperMattresses.com and put in offer code PARDO, offer code PARDO, P-A-R-D-O, you can get $50 off a Casper mattress. And Never Not Funny will get a couple bucks their way. Yeah. So remember, offer code PARDO. Also, if you need some stamps, go to stamps.com, offer code WTF. Mark Maron will get some money. It's funny, he was talking about sponsorships. He's like, you know, some people will offer a sponsorship, but it's great, it's fine, you know, people will go for it. Not everything sells great. He was selling the Man Grate. Have we talked about this? I think Drew actually owns a Man Grate. Maybe our dad does too. You know who doesn't? People who listen to Mark Maron, they don't buy Man Grates. I think he had them as a sponsor for like 2 months and he didn't sell a single one.
So. That's a very niche market.
Yeah. Well, they thought, you know, he's a guy.
Although,
right?
I think one of you bought those for dad.
Drew did, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm not saying it's a bad product again. It's just not for them. By the way, shout out to listener Susan, who was telling the story of she gave us to me what I think is probably the ultimate compliment we've got so far. She's like, I listened to your 2010 podcast, and I want next time I have like a free weekend, I want to sit down with my husband and watch 2001 followed by 2010.
And I said, oh, she's my hero.
I said, oh, be careful, because you know 2001 is don't get too comfy because you might fall asleep. And that's, she said, her husband, Mark, is like, oh, yeah, I slept through 2001, I think, once or twice. Like, well, maybe inspired by a podcast, you'll stay awake for it. But she also said that when she works out, she listens to podcasts. And she only has a couple on her list. And one of them, I think I recommended to her, was How Stuff Works. Because, you know, those guys are interesting. But she's like, you know what? You guys are better than How Stuff Works. How Stuff Works, they have commercials all the time. If I listen to a bunch of commercials, I'll listen to the radio. they say it's an hour long. Then I put it in my treadmill for an hour, and then the podcast is done before my treadmill is. And also, sometimes I'll listen to it. The subject is something I want to hear about, but they don't tell me anything new. It's like, you guys are always have interesting stuff. It's like, well, that was nice.
Well, it might not be new, but it's sometimes funny.
Yeah, if nothing else, you're going to hear Bill Cosby say, right.
As I texted you, and I will repeat this for the benefit of the listeners, my admiration to her is because she could be on a treadmill for an hour.
Oh, no. She is very fit. She will outlive us all.
Oh, my God. I'm tired just listening to the fact that she could be on a treadmill for an hour. So, kudos to you. And you need to come on the show.
Okay. Well, offer has been extended.
Yeah. Pick a movie and come on the show. Come join us. And then you can hear yourself and then your husband can listen to you.
And it's also a legacy project because if you get into a tragic accident a couple weeks after the podcast,
your voice will
be on the internet for your children and other grandchildren.
Stop.
Okay.
Stop.
All right. I won't sell it that hard.
Oh, geez, way to sell it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you die tomorrow.
It's a time capsule of what you were like in 2016. Your heirs will appreciate it. Your descendants.
Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on a new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts, dial it already.